From the annals of modern astronomy, we know of cases when a comet traveling on an elongated orbit was caught by the planet Jupiter, by which is meant the change of the cometary orbit to one of a short period, with the Sun in the focus of its orbit. It is possible to reconstruct the planetary disturbances of that age with some approximation. In my understanding, Mercury was once a satellite of Jupiter, or possibly of Saturn. In the course of the events which followed Saturn's interaction with Jupiter and its subsequent disruption, Mercury was pushed from its orbit and was directed to the Sun by Jupiter. It could, however, have been a comet, and the entwined snakes of the Caduceus may memorialize the appearance it had when seen by the inhabitants of the Earth. At some point, a contact occurred between the magnetospheres of Mercury and the Earth, described in the traditions of various nations. That the Earth was once a satellite of a giant planet is nothing more than a surmise. We dealt with it only as with a hypothetical construction, requiring further elucidation. But with a greater show of support derived from the mythological and folkloristic sources, we have tried to demonstrate on the case of Mercury that once it had been a satellite of one of the giant planets and was directed by Jupiter closer to the Sun. The claim therefore is that Mercury has traveled on its present orbit for only some 5,000 or 6,000 years. This view conflicts with both the nebula and the tidal theories of the origin of the planetary family, and with the assumption that the planets have occupied the same orbits for billions of years. The overthrow of the cities of the plain. The book of Genesis portrays the age of the patriarchs as a time of great upheavals in nature, in which the geology of the Jordan Valley underwent some drastic changes. The focus of these events was in the place now occupied by the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea, according to the Genesis account, was not yet in existence in the days of Abraham. In its place there was a fertile plain, known as the Plain of Sittim, with five populous cities: Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, and Soar. When Lot arrived in the region, he lifted up his eyes, and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. The 19th chapter of the book of Genesis tells of a catastrophe in which these cities were overwhelmed, overturned, and swallowed by the earth. The sun was risen upon the earth when the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities, and all the plain, and all the inhabitants of the cities, and that which grew upon the ground. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord, and he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. The description of this upheaval has always aroused wonder. There is clearly something unnatural or extraordinary that is recorded, one commentator wrote. The great rift of the Jordan and the Dead Sea bear witness to a tremendous upheaval. With the end of the tertiary period, in an event of extreme violence, the entire Syrian land, from its south end to its north end, was torn apart, and the ground in between sank into the depths, so wrote Professor M. Blankenhorn, the explorer of the region of the Dead Sea. In his later work, he advanced the age of the rift to the pluvial, or the beginning of the first glacial age. The origin of the Dead Sea occurred in a great mountain movement, with collapse and dislocation, that took place at the beginning of the pluvial, in the first glacial period. In these titanic events, conditions were created for the existence of an inner sea. A period of dryness followed the first glacial, or pluvial period. In a new pluvial period, the second glacial epoch, the lake reached its greatest dimensions. The Dead Sea spread to the northern side of the present Sea of Galilee, engulfing it together with the Jordan Valley between. At the time, as fossil snails show, the water was not yet saline. The rift in which the Lake of Galilee, the Jordan, and the Dead Sea lie is the deepest depression on any continent. The surface of the Dead Sea is close to 400 meters below the level of the Mediterranean, and its deepest bottom is some 320 meters lower still. The shore falls steeply from the Judean Mountains on the west. On the eastern side of the rift rise the Moabite Mountains. The walls of the chasm show sharp broken strata that remained horizontal, which proves that the breaking down was instantaneous. The force which caused this slide movement must have been stupendous. The ground of the rift around the Dead Sea is covered with coagulated lava masses, taking the form of an immense herd of giant elephants with rough skin. These lava eruptions from fissures are ascribed to the second interglacial period. To the south end of the Dead Sea towers a big cliff of salt called Jebel Uzdam, Mount of Sodom. It is absolutely impossible that the salt sediment of a sea should precipitate in such a form. Only the rupture of the ground could create this site, singular in the entire world. The destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah took place in historical times, according to my scheme in a catastrophe which caused also the end of the Old Kingdom in Egypt. The geologists refer the upheaval which tore Syria in two to the end of the tertiary period, long before human history began. Now the question is legitimate: how old is the Dead Sea? The age of the Dead Sea. There is a way of calculating the age of the Dead Sea. This interior lake contains concentrated solutions of salts. These salts flow into the sea with the waters of its tributaries. Thermal springs bring salt to the Sea of Galilee, and the Jordan carries them to the Dead Sea, which has no outlet. From the surface of the Dead Sea, in the deep hot rift, the water evaporates, leaving the salts behind. By calculating the amount of salts in the sea and the amount that reaches it annually by way of the Jordan and other streams, as well as from thermal springs on its shores, the approximate age of the Dead Sea can be determined. Such an attempt was partially made. The magnesium salts in the Jordan served as a basis for the calculation. It was reckoned that the present annual rate of influx of magnesium in the water of the Jordan alone, when related to the concentration of magnesium in the Dead Sea, should give a figure of approximately 50,000 years as the age of the sea. The author of this estimate admitted that even this figure is probably too high. The salinity of the Jordan must have decreased with time, for the thermal sources carry more salt when they are young and their temperature is high. In the above calculation, it was estimated that the Jordan carries 6 million tons of water daily to the Dead Sea and that it deposits 181 million tons of magnesium annually. However, on an average day more than double that amount evaporates from the Dead Sea, and its surface does not fall. Other sources must be making up the difference. The rivers Zirka, Kalo, and Arnon, which flow into the sea from the east, carry salt solutions from many springs. The shores of the Dead Sea abound in highly concentrated thermal springs which contain rich amounts of magnesium. These sources flow directly into the sea, bringing a richer influx of magnesium than the Jordan. In addition, there are, on the shores of the Dead Sea, abundant vestiges of thermal springs with rich sediments of salts that are inactive at present. It is highly probable, too, that there are submarine sources in the Dead Sea which may provide magnesium, but they are indeterminable. When these factors are taken into consideration, the age of the Dead Sea, computed on the basis of its magnesium content, must be drastically reduced. A computation that takes, as its basis, the amount of sodium in the Jordan points to a recent date for the origin of the Dead Sea. The proportion of sodium to magnesium in the water of the Jordan is about 4 to 1, in the Dead Sea it is 1 to 2. If the Jordan were the only source of the sodium for the Dead Sea, the age of the Dead Sea would be only about 6,000 years. But the thermal sources on the western, eastern, and southern shores contain sodium too, so may the submarine sources, which cannot be evaluated. It is likely, therefore, that the sea has existed for only about 4,000 years. When again the fact is taken into account that the thermal sources are usually more concentrated when they first break out and when they are at a higher temperature, it may well be asked why the age of this sea should not be reduced still more. It is probable that deeper levels of water have a greater salt concentration. 50,000 years as the age of the Dead Sea was an unexpectedly low estimate. The rift in which the Dead Sea is situated is considered to be the result of a catastrophe at the beginning of the first glacial period. Now a simple reckoning shows that the saline sea with the Jordan has not existed longer than 5,000 years. The Great Rift and the Jordan. The story of the violent changes that occurred in the Jordan Valley, the memory of which is connected with the time of the patriarchs and in which Sodom and Gomorrah were overturned, does not mention that the Valley of Sittim, where the cities were located, became an inner sea. Sulfur and brimstone fell from heaven. One of the best cultivated areas was overturned. Fire from beneath and fire from above accomplished the desolation. All this is described, but not the appearance of a sea. However, when the Israelites under Moses and Joshua reached the area in their flight from Egypt, they found the lake there. It seems to have appeared after a catastrophe later than the one that destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. But if there was no Dead Sea before the time of the Exodus, whither did the Jordan flow, assuming it was already in existence? The Jordan might not have existed at all, or it could have flowed into the open sea, the Mediterranean. It probably did not flow along the rift over the Araba into the Aqaba Gulf of the Red Sea, as no traces of marine life are found at the height of the watershed of Araba. The barrier between the Dead Sea and the Aqaba Gulf is about 500 meters high. The watershed between the Jordan River and the Kishon River, which flows into the Mediterranean, at Mount Gilboa, is 500 meters above the ocean level. The topographical shape of the region of the Beth Shan Valley, stretching from the Jordan towards the Esdraelon Valley, makes the flow of the Jordan into the Mediterranean a far more acceptable conjecture than a presumed flow of the Jordan over the slopes of the mountain of Hor into the Red Sea. Of course, it can be regarded as certain that the geography of the environs of the Red Sea and of the continents in general was quite different before and after the catastrophe that resulted in the formation of the Dead Sea. The Great Rift, which begins in Syria between the Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon, runs along the Jordan Valley, the Dead Sea, the Araba, the Aqaba Gulf, the Red Sea, and continues through the continent of Africa as far as Zimbabwe, is generally regarded as the product of a grandiose revolution in the shell of the earth. For many thousands of kilometers, the Great Rift runs from Asia to Africa. Prehistoric man witnessed the latest phases of widespread tectonic movements which convulsed East Africa and provoked great subsidences, of as much as 1,500 feet or more, in the early Quaternary strata, whereby was occasioned the discharge of lava and erupted scoriae, modifying notably the courses of the rivers and the circumstances in which the lakes rose or fell in level, and even changing the outlines of these bodies of water. Changes in the watercourses and lakes took place along the entire length of the rift. The deepest place in the rift on land is the valley of the Jordan and the Dead Sea. It appears that the catastrophe which originated the Dead Sea caused also the origin of the Great Rift. Beyond the Red Sea, which stretches for several hundred kilometers and has not a single affluent river, the aquatic life of the African lakes and rivers belongs to the so-called Ethiopian's geographical region. According to Annandale, the explanation of the Ethiopian affinity of the fish fauna of the Jordan is that the Jordan formed at one time merely part of the river system that ran down the Great Rift Valley. The Jordan was one branch of this huge river system. The chain of lakes in East Africa represents the other, and together they opened into the Indian Ocean. Whatever the structural changes of the earth in the catastrophes before that which I describe here, there must have been some time when the Jordan streamed into the Valley of Sittim, the name of the plain before the Dead Sea originated, and continued into the Mediterranean, most probably through the Jezreel Valley. Legendary reminiscences from the patriarchal age indicate that the Jordan existed before the Dead Sea came into being. It appears that the coming out of Paddan Aram to Canaan required the passage of a river. Today the way from Palestine to the north does not require the crossing of water. But if the Jordan did flow through the Esdraelon Valley into the Mediterranean, it had to flow in a direction opposite to the one in which it flows today. Does there exist any reminiscence about the Jordan changing the direction of its flow? It is not the story in the book of Joshua about the Jordan halting its flow. There it is told that the water was stopped at Adama, north of Jericho. This indicates that the flow of the Jordan was already from north to south, as today. The existence of the Dead Sea is also mentioned at the time the Israelites approached Canaan, but it is described as recent. It is called the Sea of the Plain. The blocking of the Jordan River by falling slices of the banks happened a number of times. The stoppage referred to in the Book of Joshua is described as a temporary blocking of the Jordan River in a time of frequent earthquakes, and not as a reversal of the flow. But there are, In scripture, references to the reversal of the flow of the Jordan. When Israel went out of Egypt, the sea saw and fled, Jordan was driven back. The mountains skipped like rams, the little hills like lambs. What ailed thee, O thou sea, that thou fleddest? Thou Jordan that thou was driven back? Tremble, thou earth, at the presence of the Lord, which turned the rock into a standing water, the flint into a fountain of waters. Here the reversal of the flow of the Jordan is associated in time not only with the Exodus and the catastrophe of the Sea of Passage, but also with the appearance of a new inner sea, standing water. A river that changed the direction of its flow must have been regarded as a very remarkable phenomenon. An inscription of Thutmose reads, "Frontier northern, as far as that inverted water which goeth down in going up." In order to explain this passage, it was supposed that the Egyptians could not imagine that a river flows otherwise than from south to north, as does the Nile, and they wondered at a river flowing in another direction. The Euphrates flows from the northwest to the southeast, the Onoats north to south for part of its course, afterwards turning west and emptying into the Mediterranean. The explanation is obviously inadequate. There are many rivers in the world and they flow in all directions. The river that reversed its direction is the Jordan. Prior to the Exodus, the Jordan Valley was on a higher level than the Mediterranean Sea. With the rupture of the tectonic structure along the river and the dropping of the Dead Sea Chasm, many brooks in southern Palestine which had been flowing to the south must have changed their direction and started to flow towards Palestine, emptying into the southern shore of the Dead Sea. This occurrence served as a symbolic picture for the dispersed children of Israel, who also will return to their homeland, turn again our captivity as the streams in the south. The plain of Siddim became a sea. When Israel wandered into the wilderness in a solitary way, the Lord turned rivers into the wilderness, and the water springs into dry ground, and fruitful land into barrenness, but elsewhere he turned the wilderness into standing water, and the dry ground into water springs. The opening of the Great Rift, or its further expansion, accompanied by the overturning of the plain and the origin of the Dead Sea, was a catastrophe that ended an era. In my understanding, the end of the Early Bronze Age or the Old Kingdom in Egypt coincided with these events. The end of the Early Bronze Age. The Old Kingdom in Egypt, the period when the pyramids were built, a great and splendid age, came to its end in a natural disaster. At the conclusion of the Sixth Dynasty, Egypt is suddenly blotted out from our sight as if some great catastrophe had overwhelmed it. The second city of Troy came to an end at the same time the Old Kingdom of Egypt fell. It was destroyed in a violent paroxysm of nature. The Early Bronze Age was simultaneously terminated in all the countries of the ancient East. A vast catastrophe spread ruin from Troy to the valley of the Nile. This fact has been extensively documented by Claude F. A. Schaeffer, professor at Collège de France, excavator of Ras Shamra, Ugarit. Schaeffer observed at Ras Shamra on the Syrian coast clear signs of great destruction that pointed to violent earthquakes and tidal waves, and other signs of a natural disaster. Among the greatest of these took place at the end of the Old Kingdom in Egypt. At the occasion of his visit to Troy, then under excavation by Carl Bludgeon, he became aware that Troy, too, had been repeatedly destroyed by natural catastrophes at the same times when Ras Shamra was destroyed. The distance from the Dardanelles near which the mound of Troy lies to Ras Shamra in Syria is about 600 miles on a straight line. In modern annals of seismology, no earthquake is known to have occurred covering an area of such an extent. He then compared the findings of these two places with signs of earthquakes in numerous other localities of the ancient East. After painstaking work, he came to the conclusion that more than once in historical times the entire region had been shaken by prodigious earthquakes. As to the destruction that ended the Early Bronze Age, Schaeffer wrote, "There is not for us the slightest doubt that the conflagration of Troy II corresponds to the catastrophe that made an end to the habitations of the Early Bronze Age of Alarcochuayac, of Alisar, of Tarsus, of Tepehisar, in Asia Minor, and to the catastrophe that burned ancient Ugarit, too, in Syria, The city of Byblos that flourished under the Old Kingdom of Egypt, the contemporaneous cities of Palestine, and that was among the causes that terminated the Old Kingdom of Egypt. In the same catastrophe were destroyed the civilizations of Mesopotamia and Cyprus. What caused the disappearance of so many cities and the upheaval of an entire civilization? It was an all-encompassing catastrophe. Ethnic migrations were, no doubt, the consequence of the manifestation of nature. The initial and real causes must be looked for in some cataclysm over which man had no control. Everywhere it was simultaneous and sudden. The shortcoming in Schaeffer's work was in not making the logical deduction that if catastrophes of such dimensions took place in historical times, there must be references to them in ancient literary sources. If a cataclysm terminated the early Bronze Age, decimated the population, but left also survivors, then some memory of the events must have also found its way to be preserved in writing, if not by survivors, turned to vagrancy and having to take care for the first necessities of life, then by the descendants of the survivors. In my scheme, the end of the early Bronze Age or Old Kingdom in Egypt is the time of the momentous events connected with the story of the patriarch Abraham, and described in the book of Genesis as the overturning of the plain. The cause of the catastrophe could not have been entirely unknown to the ancients. We must therefore become attentive also to other traditions connected with these events. Zidk. The time of the patriarch Abraham witnessed unusual behavior by the planet Jupiter. The fact that Jupiter displayed a burst of activity exactly in the time of Abraham must not appear a coincidence. It was in the times of great global catastrophes, when the world was threatened with destruction, that religious reformers gained prominence and contemporaries looked to a divine man for guidance. Zidk was the name of Jupiter, and we read that in the days of Abraham the planet underwent some visible changes. Rabbinical sources relate that when Abraham was on an expedition against Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and his allied kings, who had captured and despoiled Sodom, and taken Abraham's nephew Lot into captivity, the star Zidk illuminated the night, thereby ensuring the expedition's success. When he returned from his victory over Chedorlaomer and the kings who were allied with him, the book of Genesis relates, the king of Sodom came out to greet him. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of the Most High. Abraham ceded to Melchizedek the spoils of the war he had obtained in Syria from Chedorlaomer. Ancient Salem was a holy place, and Palestine was a holy land from grey antiquity. Thus, in the documents of the Old Kingdom in Egypt, Palestine is named God's land, Tanita, or divine, holy, land. Abraham lived at the end of the Old Kingdom in Egypt, and documents from that time already refer to Palestine as God's land. But in early times, it was an astral god. The meaning of the name Melchizedek is Zidk is, my, king. Zidk, as said, is the name of the planet Jupiter, remaining so in the astronomy of the Jews in later ages. In the Talmud Zidk refers to Jupiter. Zidk also has the meaning of righteousness or justice. It is beyond the scope of this work to find which of the meanings, the name of the planet or a word in common usage, preceded and which followed. It is conceivable that this planet was worshipped in that remote time and that, in the days of the patriarch Abraham, the cult of Jupiter was prominent in the Salem of the high priest Melchizedek. Melchizedek, priest of the Most High, was, it follows, a worshipper of Jupiter. The change in Jupiter's motion. In the tractate Shabbat of the Babylonian Talmud it is said that in order to teach Abraham the futility and meaninglessness of astrology, the Lord let the planet Zidk, or Jupiter, change its rising point from west to east. Go forth, that is cease, thy planet gazing, for Israel is free from planetary influence. What is thy calculation? Because Zidk, Jupiter, stands in the west, I will turn it back and place it in the east. And thus it is written, who hath raised up Zidk from the east? He hath summoned it for his sake, sc. For the sake of Abraham. This statement of the rabbis contains some contradictory ideas. Nevertheless, it may preserve certain elements of ancient law. The Babylonians described Marduk, or Jupiter, as having an eastward motion, different from the other planets. The earliest system from Babylon has, however, east and west reversed, and assigns to its chief god Marduk, as god of the planet Jupiter, a definite easterly direction, to Mercury, on the other hand, a westerly one. The Ra mythology of Egypt is that which describes Ra's course from west to east. Ra, rising in the west, was called Harakht, only god, king of the gods, he riseth in the west. However, some hymns were addressed to Ra when he riseth in the eastern part of heaven. Egyptian law also knew of a Horus of the west and a Horus of the east. Horus was the planet Jupiter. The expression found in Latin literature, Jupiter Dionis, or two-faced, could be interpreted as denoting two motions of Jupiter, an eastward and a westward. This conforms to the same expression applied to the sun where, as I endeavored to show, it denotes easterly and westerly movements of the luminary. The celestial mechanics of the implied reversal of Jupiter's apparent motion remains unsolved. Jupiter apparently changed the place of its rising points without a similar and simultaneous change by the sun and all the planets and stars. It might seem that in order for Jupiter alone to be subject to a change, a reversal of orbital motion is required, an unlikely proposition from the point of view of celestial mechanics. Earlier we asked in relation to Saturn's great prominence, was not the Earth at some early period a satellite of that planet? And we may ask again, with the ascendance of Jupiter, was the Earth not in the domain of this successor to the celestial throne? Theoretically, if the Earth were revolving around Jupiter, a reversal of our planet's north and south geographical poles would cause Jupiter to appear to change the point of its rising. The worship of Jupiter. From Zeus let us begin, him do we mortals never leave unnamed, full of Zeus are all the streets and all the marketplaces of men, full is the sea and the heavens thereof. He it was who first set up the signs in heaven. Wherefore him do we men ever worship first and last. In these words Aratus, FL, -310, pictured the place the planet god Jupiter occupied in the thoughts of men. Nobody today in the streets and marketplaces mentions the planet Jupiter. Saint Augustine, 7 centuries after Aratus, asked, but since they call Jupiter king of all, who will not laugh to see his star so far surpassed in brilliancy by the star of Venus? They answer that it only appears so because it is higher up and much further away from the earth. If, therefore, its greater dignity has deserved a higher place, why is Saturn higher in the heavens than Jupiter? Marduk, the great god of the Babylonians, was the planet Jupiter, so was Amun of the Egyptians, Zeus of the Greeks was the same planet, Jupiter of the Romans, as the name shows, was again the same planet. Why was this planet chosen as the most exalted deity? In Greece it was called All Highest, Mighty Zeus, in Rome Jupiter Optimus, Maximus. In Babylon it was known as the greatest of the stars, as Ahuramazda. It was called by Darius the greatest of the gods. In India Shiva was described as the great ruler and considered the mightiest of all the gods. He was said to be as brilliant as the sun. Everywhere Jupiter was regarded as the greatest deity, greater than the sun, moon, and other planets. Homer makes Zeus say that all the other gods together could not pull him down, but he could pull them along with the earth. That is how far I overwhelm you all, both gods and men. Commenting on this passage, Astatheus wrote that according to some ancient authorities, Homer meant the orbits of the planets from which Jupiter could drive the rest of them. But they could not drive it. This sentence of Homer is close to the truth. Jupiter is greater and more powerful than Saturn, its rival, together with Mars, Earth, Venus, and Mercury. Jupiter is more than 1,000 times greater than the Earth or Venus in volume, and 6,000 times greater than Mercury. But it appears that one could not guess this from observation with the naked eye. Even through a very powerful telescope, Jupiter looks like an inch-large flat disk, surrounded by its 4 larger satellites. The ancients knew something unknown to the moderns when they asserted that Jupiter can overpower all other planets, the Earth included. Jupiter of the Thunderbolt. Nobody who observes a thunderstorm would arrive at the conclusion that the planet Jupiter sends the lightning. Therefore, it is singular that peoples of antiquity pictured the planet god Jupiter as wielding a thunderbolt. This is equally true of the Roman Jupiter, the Greek Zeus, and the Babylonian Marduk. Pliny wrote,